Well, to celebrate Farm to School Month, we're going to be talking with two people who are really involved in garden-based education here in Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller, of course, and our guests today with me in the studio, Nathan Larson, is the director of the Cultivate Health Initiative. He serves on the boards of the National School Garden Network and Wisconsin Association for Environmental Education. And he's the author of a really cool book. It's called Teaching in Nature's Classroom, Core Principles of Garden-Based Education. And Nathan Larson, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
With me by phone, we have Sam Dennis. Sam is an associate professor in the Department of Landscape Architecture at UW-Madison and is the research director of the Environmental Design Lab. And Sam, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, you're welcome. I'm glad to be here too, Larry.
The two of them are collaborating on a joint public health project to grow and sustain the school garden network and movement in Wisconsin. And maybe your child, or maybe you got a grandchild that has a at his or her school has a garden. How do they like it? Do you think a garden's a good learning tool? I hope you'll join in the conversation. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can also send us an email. Email address is talk@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Nathan, let's just start with you. Explain what a garden-based education is about and where this idea came from.
Sure. Well, garden-based education can look a lot of different ways, and it's one of the great things about an educational garden setting is that there's so many positive benefits and ways that can be enriching for children that come out and visit and work in that garden. Academic achievement, certainly. There's a lot of great ways to do different kinds of lessons, math lessons, literacy lessons, art lessons out in the garden. And at the core of our work is really looking at that public health piece and seeing how gardens are a particularly good place for young people to get in touch with their food, which makes sense.
I was going to say, and you're getting started in this in reading your book. It was really interesting how you got involved in a really successful program in Madison.
Yeah, I got involved in this work about 17 years ago. I was working as a naturalist out in Northern California and just fell in love with the work. I just felt, seeing firsthand what a powerful impact it had for students in the garden. And so when I came back to Madison, which is my hometown, Troy Gardens was just starting to take root. And so I got involved in trying to build youth programs at Troy Gardens and have worked with many wonderful colleagues and friends over the years. And there's just these fantastic, particularly the Troy Kids Garden program at Troy Gardens, and then our Goodman Youth Farm project out on the east side of Madison at Kennedy Elementary School.
Wonderful programs.
Yeah,
really great programs. And Sam, tell us about the Environmental Design Lab.
Well, we put it together to continue to provide the kind of research support for what Nathan and others do in the field. But what I tell the teachers that are working in garden-based outdoor education is that, my job is to prove what they already know, to give them the evidence base to support, their efforts to advocate for garden-based education, and also to help them have a voice in providing what we're calling practice-based evidence, evidence from their experience. Influencing and informing our own research. So the goal of the Environmental Design Lab really is to provide a platform for that interchange between practitioners and researchers.
And Nathan, maybe you can talk a little bit more about the Cultivate Health Initiative and how garden schools might fit into that mission.
Yeah, so the Cultivate Health Initiative, it's a new initiative. We just received funding, $1 million grant from the School of Medicine and Public Health to support this new initiative to grow the school garden and community youth garden movement across the state over the next 5 years. And it's a joint project of Community Groundworks, which is a nonprofit here in Madison that I referred earlier to the Troy Kids Garden and the Youth Farm, which are a couple of the programs, as well as Troy Community Farm. And then the Environmental Design Lab. And then we're going to bring in many, many other partners. And our hope is to really build a strong, thriving network that supports all of these school gardens. We've seen so many school gardens appearing across the state. There's a lot of interest in garden-based education statewide currently. And at the same time, we know that the networks really support teachers and sharing great ideas and resources and having professional development opportunities available. And so we'll be building that infrastructure to support this growing movement that's happening here in our state.
Yeah, I as a matter of fact, my daughter's grade school is it's a new school in Madison, and they're looking to start a garden next year. So I'm pretty sure some of those folks may be listening right now. Yeah. As a matter of fact, and I promised them to take a look at that they could see your book. And
wonderful.
And so. That's another question that kind of goes along with it. Do you work with other many schools around the state or around the community, I should say?
Yeah, I mean, our work. So I think what led us to this role of trying to build a statewide movement has been, and this network has really been, a lot of rich relationships in the Madison area. We were part of a great project called the Digging In Project, which was supported by the Madison Community Foundation and other partners that funded 15 schools around Dane County to build their school garden projects. And we see a lot. Madison is actually just a national model for school gardens right now. In June, we had the National Farm to Cafeteria Conference here in Madison, and that was a testament, I think, that people are really seeing the farm to school movement, is really seeing Wisconsin and Madison as a real active hub for this kind of programming.
Sam, what elements are important when designing a school garden space?
Well, a community garden or a farm would be designed for maximum production, right? But these are also outdoor classrooms. And so laying out the garden in a way that supports teaching is important. I think it's one kind of overlooked element sometimes. How do you get a group of kids to sit in a circle and watch a demonstration or tell stories or listen? So it is an outdoor classroom as well, and that's the kind of technical assistance that we give from the Environmental Design Lab.
That's very cool, and that could be available to other schools as well.
Oh, sure. That's part of our role in the network that Nathan's talking about.
We'll give our listeners a chance to join in. You have a question or comment or maybe an experience to share about a school garden, I hope you'll join in. 1-800-642-1234 is the number, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. Do we know how many school gardens there are in the state right now?
We're working on, I think we've counted about 200 so far, but
wow.
I'm sure there are more. Yeah.
Wow.
And so one of the things we'll be doing early on here is really getting an inventory and creating a map of all the school gardens across the state so that everyone's aware of who's out there and who they could be reaching out to.
One of the teachers at Emily School asked me, well, how much, I don't really know that much about gardening. I think there may be some people who say, maybe I don't know enough to be a garden teacher.
Yeah, that's a common concern. And I think that gets back to what Sam was saying, is that, really the goal of the learning garden is simply learning. And so we're learning out there together. The teachers learn alongside the students. You really don't need a big background in gardening. And in fact, sometimes it's a hindrance because if you're used to getting all your tomatoes in right after that last frost date in the spring, you might feel frustrated. Because in that learning environment, the goal is for the students to have that experience, to make those mistakes themselves, to learn from that, and to really feel that they are the gardeners. That's the key, is that when those children enter the garden, they feel like this is their garden and it's a place for them to explore and learn firsthand through their experiences.
And I'm wondering how this works. I'm thinking about a normal school year. And a normal school year, it's over probably end of May, or maybe first week of June or something like that. You've got the garden growing season, Sam, and then they're not coming back until harvest time.
Yeah, well, one of the things we've learned from our evaluation work is that you know, every school or most schools have a community engagement plan. And one of the ways that a garden can help out with that is to connect the school with the community through the gardens. And Nathan has probably a lot more to say about those partnerships. But, you know, it helps embed the school in the surrounding community, that summer need for summertime partnerships.
Yeah, I think that's cool. And then even bringing the students in. But Nathan, man, talk a bit more about that. You've got some great examples.
Yeah, I'd love to just say, too, also that, you know, this concept of the Wisconsin School Garden Network is really, it encompasses early care and education settings, after school, community center settings. So really time, you know, students that are in school, but also out of school time as well. And that's a way, too, that the summertime can actually be a pretty active time for an educational garden.
Yeah, there's a fairly large early learning center as a part of my daughter's school.
Oh, great.
And the early learning folks are really interested in this as well.
Yeah, it's a fantastic place for young children. Absolutely.
Yeah, we just finished a national survey of natural outdoor classrooms in early childhood care settings. And the food that's produced, the gardening, has been an important part of everyone's story. I think we had about 270 different sites across the U.S. That participated, and each of them mentioned something about growing food, tasting food, even at that very early age, being incredibly important for healthy attitudes about food.
Yeah, absolutely. John in Appleton has something. Hi, John.
Yeah, good morning, and thank you for all you do, and thanks for everybody there. Just wanted to blow the horn for my sister-in-law in the Galesville, Ettrick, Trempealeau district, west, just north of La Crosse. They've been having they reclaimed a old tennis court, and for the last 5 years have been growing food there, elementary project, and they have no problem getting kids to maintain the effort over the summer. And then secondarily, I sat on the school board here in Appleton for a term, and there are a number of schools at elementary, even through high school, here in Appleton, so make sure you find out about us up here and add us to the good list.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Were you aware of that school?
No, and actually that's interesting. There's a project at Sparta High School where they reclaimed an old tennis court and put in garden beds. And so that sounds like it must be a trend in our state. That's a great story to hear about.
Yeah.
That's a coincidence, I think.
John, thanks so much for calling. You give a call, too. We're going to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the IdeasNet. Then we'll be back with our guests. You stay with us. Interest in school gardens has been growing a lot, leaps and bounds in the last few years, and we're looking at garden-based education with our guest today, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we visit with Nathan Larson's in the studio with me. He's the director of the Cultivate Health Initiative. He serves on the boards of the National School Garden Network and Wisconsin Association for Environmental Education, and is the author of the book, Teaching in Nature's Classroom, Core Principles of Garden-Based Education. On the phone with us, Sam Dennis. Sam's an associate professor in the Department of Landscape Architecture at UW-Madison and the research director of the Environmental Design Lab. And they're collaborating on a joint public health project to grow and sustain the school garden network and movement throughout Wisconsin. They've got a $1 million grant to do this. It's wonderful. Maybe as you listen to them, you might think about what gardening taught you as a child or what questions that you might have about school gardens. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. You know, a caller asked if the gardens that you guys work on are organic or not.
Yeah, I would say that most children's gardens, most school gardens tend to follow organic growing methods. That's a pretty common way of growing in that setting.
Sam, what in your experience, and actually you maybe we should talk about the book because you helped Nathan with the book, did you not?
Well, help is in a small way, I think. because what we were doing is taking his extraordinary writing and then linking it to the evidence base from research, so that you know, a lot of times, well, let me take a step back. A lot of times, you know, when teachers or educators talk about their work and their experience, it gets not discredited, but it gets criticized for being like anecdotal or, you know, a sample of one. And so what we spent a lot of time doing was to find and report the evidence base, so we could say that what Nathan is talking about is an evidence-based practice. It's not just based on one person or a handful of people's experience. It's not just Nathan's experience, but it's supported by the research. And then we have links in each of the chapters to the research.
Yeah, I think it's really cool that way. Every chapter and teaching in Nature's Classroom, and maybe Nathan will go ahead and sort of explain how the book's laid out and so forth.
Yeah, so the book, for me, it was, you know, these principles, the core principles or guiding principles have emerged over the 17 years I've been doing this work. And as Sam mentioned, I wrote about them through illustrative anecdotes, stories about these powerful moments that would happen in the garden that are common. You know, when you work in a garden, you see these things happen a lot. And then working with Sam and also our colleague Alex Wells at the Environmental Design Lab to create that connection between the principle and then the evidence base. And I think, you know, that gets to this idea that as a, you know, when teachers are garden-based educators, when they're trying to advocate for garden-based education or environmental education, they really have to be advocates. You know, they have to be educators and advocates because they're trying to often make a case for that this is quality education. It's important for kids to go outside to learn.
Right.
And so we
have to make a case to maybe to the principal or maybe to people like me who are on the school boards.
Yeah, potentially. Right. Right. So we hope this book would serve teachers that way too, that they could, you know, feel that inspiration, but also have that piece of advocacy to be able to say to their colleagues, if there's resistance, to say, this is, you know, we really need to teach our kids outdoors. This is an important part of a whole education for a child.
Well, I really enjoyed reading the book, and your various chapters and your guiding principles, I think, are really cool. And I'd like to talk about some of them with you, because I think it gives a better idea of how the, you know, how gardens can be so important in that kind of setting.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Let the Garden Be a Teacher.
Right, right. So that's an important one. You know, this idea that, you know, especially in an outdoor setting where it's an unpredictable learning environment. There's a lot happening. It's a living, breathing environment. And so, you know, when teaching really comes alive in that sort of environment, when you let kids interact with it, you know, that the lesson plan doesn't keep them from getting their hands in the dirt or following a butterfly through the garden or taking notice of a red-tailed hawk that happens to fly by in the middle of a lesson, just even digging. I remember long ago working with some students, and we were digging out a root system of this tree because we were moving a chicken coop to that area. And we had a student that was working down, you know, the hole got bigger and deeper. And eventually there was a student down in the hole, you know, pulling up the dirt. And then all of a sudden he came up with this handful of dirt, and he said, wait a minute, there's clay down here. How did this get down here? And it was that realization of that, you know, he'd seen clay in his classroom in a bag.
Yeah.
But he didn't know that it came from the ground like that. And so, you know, that kind of lesson, that firsthand lesson, is just very powerful, and it happens a lot in the garden.
And the whole business of, okay, you may have a lesson plan, and you go out there, but as you're saying, you know, if a red-tailed hawk flies up and lands on a post 15 feet away...
Yeah.
You kind of drop the lesson plan for a bit anyway to talk about that red-tailed hawk.
Right. You take advantage of what we call as a teachable moment because all the students are clearly fixated, right? They're fascinated, and it's something you do want to take that time to ask them questions about it and have them observe the hawk and learn through that experience.
Sam, and Nathan too, what age groups tend to take to this? Is there an age group that tends to take to it more, or is it pretty good across the board?
Well, it's a great question. I would say across the board, but in different ways. Some of our evaluation research was with middle schools, and you know, what's opening doors in the garden. The garden is opening doors for kids that may be not doing too well in a classroom setting where they where they're, you know, being taught in one way and they're rewarded for that single way of learning. But out in the I'm sorry, I'm going to move away from some noise. But out in the garden, they become teachers, leaders. They're in their element. It's a way they learn, and then they can demonstrate their learning to the other kids. And so it offers them an opportunity to succeed in the classroom. Imagine it's very different for younger kids, and then the high school kids that are actually working on farms would be learning something very different as well.
Yeah, I would think. You tell a good story in the book about a group of kids who hadn't taken so much to the garden itself, but they started playing instruments out in the garden.
Yeah, that was a great story. And I think, you know, before I tell the story, one important thing about a garden is that you can have, it's multifaceted. So it's not just about planting a plant. Mm-hmm. You know, that's certainly an important experience to have in a garden, but there's lots of other ways you can make that garden enriching and attractive to kids. And so I have some colleagues out in Santa Cruz, and they had this music tree. And so that inspired me, and so we installed a music tree at Troy Gardens, at the Troy Kids Garden. And it's basically, there's a lot of percussion. It's old pots and pans, and you play them with drumsticks or just sticks. And there's a group of boys, primarily, that this is a few years back, and they just got, that was how they got interested in the garden, is that they'd do some freestyle raps and they would do the percussive beats. And they got so into it that the whole group, boys and girls, started doing performances on our stage. We had this living stage that students also built. Mm-hmm. And we would have these performances every week. And then they advertised at their local elementary school, and they made flyers, and they got dressed up, and they did a Friday afternoon performance up there. And it was just cool to see all the ways that, you know, the garden can be enriching for students.
That is really, really cool. Well, let me give our listeners a chance to join in. I'm surprised we haven't gotten more calls here because I know there's interest in this. Join in. If you have an experience with a school garden of your own or working with kids in the garden, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You may have some questions about the nuts and bolts of setting up a garden as well. So I hope you'll join in for that. Are there plants? Well, you start with seeds often, but plants as well. Are there some that work better than others in sort of a teaching environment or...
Well, you know, oftentimes I say that the smaller the child, the bigger the seed kind of thing. There are little tricks like that. But there's a lot of ways that you can do instructional scaffolding so that children can be successful and really feel like they're the ones, you know, planting. For example, say you're planting peas. A great way is to just run a furrow row and put down three peas in the pattern, you know, the appropriate spacing. And then you can just give the seeds to the child, and that they know exactly the pattern. You don't have to do a lot of dictation. And that's a key thing in garden instruction, is that to avoid that dictation if possible and really let students get down there and just be able to experience it and sort of be leaders in their own learning. But there's a lot of great plants. I think one of the great things about a garden and the ways we connect kids to food is that, you know, we can really plant food that's, you know, the heirloom varieties that are just have such great flavor. You know, they wouldn't ship well, right? So it's a tomato, for example, that a student's probably never tasted before if they haven't grown food in a garden before, because, you know, the tomatoes they're getting at the store are bred for durability. And so they get these incredible, you have students say, oh, I didn't know I liked that before. That's common, you know, common comment in the garden, this realization of that tastes delicious.
Plug the cherry tomato is one of the more important for health, because, you know, not only do kids realize, oh, I like tomatoes, I didn't know that, but then they start to realize every cherry tomato plant is different, and that, you know, one may be very sweet but has kind of a tough skin. Another one is a not so great a flavor, but is really soft, and they like the feel of it on their mouth, and so they start to actually have preferences. And then that teaches the kids to to sample. I mean, to try things. And I've been out in the garden with Nathan and the class there, and you see the kids just, hey, everybody come take a bite of this pepper. Let's yeah. see what it tastes like. And that exploration really builds this sense of efficacy in the kids, and that translates to all kind of other parts of their lives. But that exploration and the confidence of knowing about food, about where it's coming from, is really important as well.
Yeah. Larry, if I could mention two plants that are good in a lot of gardens. One is fennel, and letting it go to flower.
Yeah.
And so kids will just graze off the fronds of the fennel plant. They often call it licorice plant.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one is sorrel, French sorrel, and yeah. they'll call it sour lettuce. There's a story of this boy one time that one of our garden educators found. He was eating. She kind of found him lurking behind the fennel plant. And like sort of like he was up to something. And she said, "You're welcome yeah. to eat that. You know, that's part of the garden." And he said, "Really?" And he put his hands in his pockets, and he pulled out these two huge wads of fennel and said, "Can I have a bag?" She was like, "Of course."
Oh, yeah. Man. I love it. We've got lots of callers online now. Molly and Eau Claire, something from you. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for the program and taking my call. I have a question for the guests about the types of schools that you interviewed or have stories from. I know there are several types of schools, different methods that lend themselves to nature-based and environmental-based, such as Waldorf or Montessori. But I'm wondering about some of the public schools and how you're integrating that into the curriculum for these schools that might have most of their days inside and start to make that transfer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, a lot of this is coming. It's a grassroots movement. So a lot of it is about a person or a group of people at a school. And so the schools can look very different where we're seeing some of these programs grow out of. For example, there's a food service director in Weston, Carl Welke, who for 7 years, 7 years ago, I think, or 8 years ago now, he had this interest in getting more fresh food grown out of the ground near the school grounds into the lunch programs and the food programs. And so he started engaging kids across the, you know, all the different grades in the school district and basically started farming with the kids and getting this food into the cafeteria. And, you know, I think another great thing is when you have principals that really buy into it. And we've seen a couple of great examples where the principals write it into their school improvement plans. So it's really institutionalized, and all the faculty see that then as a green light that this is something that the school is saying, yes, you know,
this
you should go ahead and do this. Yeah.
And Molly, thank you for calling. I want to give Dave a chance to join in. Dave, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's your question?
My wife started a native garden in front of her elementary school some years ago. Just wonder, how do you tactfully deal with the maintenance crew that wants to plow and salt and generally cut back anything that
that was produced? Oh, have you had that kind of experience, Nathan or Sam?
Yeah, well, I think. No, go ahead, Sam.
Well, I was just going to say, I think part of the answer is in the design. You know, raised beds. They're. You know, messy gardens sometimes in very orderly frames. So you don't have an overzealous, you know, maintenance crew coming out and cutting down the plant. So,
yeah, and I would just add that, a best practice in that planning phase is to really be in touch with your buildings and grounds, colleagues, and make sure that they know what the plan for the garden is and get their input. And a lot of people share food with them, and just really get that buy-in, so that everyone feels like that you're not just creating a lot of extra work for the grounds crew.
You know, I want to be here. We're not at the end here, but I want to mention that the book is available and it's free for interested people. Is it not, Teaching in Nature's Classroom?
Yeah, so it's funded, as I said, by the Wisconsin Partnership Program, which is at the School of Medicine and Health, Public Health at UW-Madison, and so we have free paper book copies and free ebooks that are available. If you go to the Wisconsin School Garden Network website, you can get to the link to the book website to download that ebook or order a free paper book copy. And we'd love to get it out to educators around the state.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And we'll post. We have it up on our Facebook, Jill. Yeah, Jill says, yeah, of course we've got it up there. So it's up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So we got a link there. And I would highly encourage, it's really, even if you're not thinking about it, you might be inspired to get something going if you take a look at this book. It's titled Teaching in Nature's Classroom. Wonderful. John and Eau Claire, thanks for calling.
Hey there. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I just wanted to put in a kind of a plug. Both of my daughters attend the Eau Claire Montessori School, and they have a good teaching garden program there. And they're very excited about it. I know they do use the vegetables in the lunchroom for the kids, so that's a benefit. And also, they must have had extra seeds or something, because my daughter brought home a variety of things that she had planted seed-wise, and then we planted at home. So it kind of went from the school also to home. The benefits of gardening, and we grew it as a family, and I think it's the only way I ever got her to eat red rhubarb chard is because she brought it home from school. So,
yeah, that's common.
That is common. Well, one thing I'd like to say, and this goes back to the first caller from Appleton as well, you know, the goal about growing the network and growing the movement is to connect us all together. There are lots of great examples of schools and communities doing garden-based outdoor education, and our goal is to knit together, or as Nathan says, you know, create that connective tissue between everyone so that we can support each other and grow the movement.
Absolutely. Nick in Manitowoc, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks a lot, Larry. Thanks for the guests.
Sure.
Hey, I was wondering, I know we've been talking about, and I'm all for this, you know, being outside in nature, observing nature, learning. What's the actual outcomes, the academic outcomes? Are they learning how to build their own gardens? Are they learning
sure.
the agency of this, the soil, the plants, the, you know?
Very good question. Sam, you want to take that first?
I'll start. A lot of teachers easily connect the garden-based education with whatever standards. And the obvious ones, of course, are science and biology, mathematics, art. But we interviewed some teachers at a middle school who were actually tying it into social studies, and they were learning about ancient Egypt, and they were the kids asked if they could try to grow some of the grains and different plants that they were reading about in their social studies class. And although it was not quite successful in the garden itself, it just connected the learning from the book into something they were doing with their hands outdoors. So that struck me as a really important connection with social studies.
Yeah, absolutely. Nathan?
Well, another thing that we've seen, some of the research has shown that in the garden, it's a great place for students to build self-efficacy and mastery. And particularly for students that may not be as successful in the indoor classroom setting, that, you know, building that sense of confidence in their learning and abilities out in the outdoor classroom setting, we see that it transfers. You actually can, you know, once you build that mastery in one setting, it transfers, and it actually helps you be more successful back in the indoor classroom, which is another great benefit of having that outdoor classroom component at a school.
Absolutely. Nick, thanks again for that question. As I think obviously it's a very important question, and one every teacher would probably ask, for sure. So I want to go, because we're down to the last minute or so, I just want to go back to the book itself, because it's such a nice book. I don't know how many pages we've got here, but it's a nice book, large, with lots of photos or lots of nice drawings to help out. But talking about things like engaging the senses, engaging kids in meaningful fitness, immersing yourself in nature, making connections to home and community, engaging with worms and bees and maybe chickens and other animals. You do a lot of that as well. And so, again, what's the website where people can go to get a copy of the book?
Yeah, so they can go to the Wisconsin School Garden Network, which is wischoolgardens.org, to get the link to the book.
And we'll have that posted up on our Facebook page as well. Well, the time flew by. Sam, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Sam Dennis, Associate Professor in the Department of Landscape Architecture at the UW-Madison. Nathan, great to talk with you. I hope we have a chance to do it again. Thanks, Nathan.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, too.
Nathan Larson, Director of the Cultivate Health Initiative and the author of Teaching in Nature's Classroom. Get a copy. Take a look at it. I think it can help your school and your community. And thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.